a damning prison health report, and a fraud investigation in the Northern Territory. Hello, I'm Stephen Clark with the National Indigenous News. Victoria's prison healthcare system is failing to meet the needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. That's what a report from the Ombudsman has found. The report's found the lack of input from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders into culturally informed policies is having a devastating impact on health outcomes. It found some prisoners didn't have immediate access to programs which help substance abuse. In one case, an Indigenous prisoner used a pencil sharpener and tweezers to treat an ingrown toenail after being told a podiatrist appointment would be several months away. When he asked prison officers for a band-aid for the toe, they were unable to provide one. The report's made five recommendations, including working with Aboriginal-controlled community organisations to deliver health services to people in custody. Six Aboriginal people have died in Victorian prisons over the last 4 years. The former CEO of a major Northern Territory Aboriginal corporation was sacked after more than $1 million in financial irregularities were found. Documents have revealed former Jalalakari CEO Sam Ashton was sacked in March 2023 after an investigation by independent legal and financial advisors. The Tennant Creek-based organisation is funded to provide a range of services to the Barkly region, including construction and maintenance, aged care and disability services. Our reports found the issue had impacted several businesses, including one set up for Indigenous people who can't afford funeral services. Northern Territory Police has confirmed it's launched an investigation into Jalalakari. The Federal Greens want to create a public property developer to build hundreds of thousands of affordable homes over the next 5 years. In their latest housing policy release, the party says 70% of the homes built would be offered for rent and the rest sold to owner-occupiers at a discounted rate. Rents would be capped at 25% of the average household income to save renters over $5,000 a year. At the National Press Club today, the Property Council will present a different solution to what the Greens have offered. Ahead of the debate, Greens housing spokesperson Max Chandler-Mather told the ABC their proposal is about affordability.
Because we would cut out the massive profit margins that property developers chuck onto the price of housing.
And calls are mounting for an immediate halt to logging at one of Australia's top tourism destinations after footage emerged of koalas falling to their deaths from the treetops. The allegations were made by whistleblowers, including animal welfare group Kangaroo Island Wildlife Network, which rescues and rehabilitates local wildlife on the South Australian island. It says hundreds of koalas are estimated to have died as a result of the injuries. The Greens say logging on the island should be paused until an investigation is complete. We'll have more after this.
For 30 years, the Courier Mail has been bringing new stories that matter from mob across the country. Whether you're Bundjalung, Birragubba, Noongar, Narrinjeddy, Miriam or Murning, we've got you covered. To subscribe, let our mob know about your business, event or organisation. Head to our website at www.couriermail.com and follow the links. The Courier Mail, the voices of Indigenous Australia since 1991.
Program sponsor.
Dance pop duo Electric Fields will represent Australia at this year's Eurovision contest. The popular duo is led by vocalist Zachariah Fielding, who grew up in South Australia's APY lands and often blends English with the Kunjara language in his lyrics. He's joined by producer Michael Ross on keyboards. Speaking to the ABC this morning, Fielding says the pair are buzzing.
It was absolutely thrilling. We had our little fangirl moment and then everything, reality sunk in and we were like, oh my God, now we've got to work. Now we've got to figure out what the stage is going to do, how the lighting is going to go, what are we going to wear.
What's the song done?
Yeah. And then just to deliver now when we get to Sweden.
Queensland will invest millions of dollars into LGBTQI+ healthcare for Indigenous people in the state. The $6.8 million funding boost will provide telehealth and in-person support for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander LGBTQI+ communities dealing with physical and mental health issues. Queensland's Health Minister Shannon Fentiman says the specialist support would be life-changing for transgender and gender-diverse communities in the state. To stay up to date with NIRS news, follow us on Twitter or Instagram, like us on Facebook and visit our website at nirs.org.au. And that's the latest National Indigenous News.
Ted Wilkes from Perth. I'm a Noongar man.
What up? It's your brother, man, Zimbla, and you are listening to
the National Indigenous Radio Service.
The voices of our people.
Listen online live
at nirs.org.au.
When someone was sharing intimate images without my permission and threatening me online, I didn't know what to do. One of my aunties told me about the online safety laws and help me report the abuse to esafety.gov.au. The laws help to keep people safe from severe online abuse and help to remove dangerous online content. Go to esafety.gov.au to learn more or to report online abuse. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
When you need medical care, ask yourself, do I need emergency care?
Nah.
Is this something a GP or nurse can treat?
Mm-hmm.
Can I wait for a routine appointment?
Mm-mm.
If you have an urgent, non-life-threatening issue like a cut, minor burn or sprain, get the treatment you need at a bulk-billed, walk-in Medicare urgent care clinic. Find your closest clinic and opening times at health.gov.au/MedicareUCC. Part of making Medicare stronger. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, and welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today as we travel on the national Yidinji broadcast service and inside the Yidinji territory. We are broadcasting this program and doing it for nearly 10 years now. And we just say, Bill and Gunn, welcome to the show. And thank you to everyone who allows us to use their spectrum on their prospective countries on this beautiful continent that many people know as Australia. But we just want to also say thank you to Bumba Bipra Media 98.7, because if you're listening outside the Yidinji Territory, it's probably most likely through them as part of the National Indigenous Radio Service inside the Commonwealth of Australia. And a very, very good day to you wherever you are listening to the show. We were away last week in Canberra, Ngambri Territory, Ngunnawal Territory, and we'll probably touch on that a bit today. We've got Ganyara and Yurilam and our tech advisor here and pilot and everything else. I did say our spy, but just to clarify and confirm, he is not a spy, because some people ask, as he me, was he actually a spy? And he's not. So Albert is just an average bloke trying to enjoy life here on the Yidinji Territory, so leave him alone. Ganyara and Yurilam, welcome to the program. I guess, Ganyara, maybe talk about the Canberra trip for a bit to let people know what's going on.
I'm glad you wanted to clarify if Albert was a spy or not, because there's a bit of stuff going on inside Australia at present. I don't know if you've noticed that, about prime ministers being approached or ministers being approached by other spies from other parts of the world. We keep an eye on how people look. It's crazy out there. But we've got nothing to hide from anyone either, you know. Spies are welcome if they want to come, but we're just aware of who's who in the zoo. But, yeah, Canberra was a rather different experience, because they do live in their own little Canberra bubble, you know. They're not really living in reality down there, which I find very enlightening when you go there to understand how people think. But we had to go down there. Look, there are some very concerning issues that we had to address for us, as well as for the Commonwealth of Australia, believe it or not, you know. Australia thinks it's got its foundation set in concrete. It's absolutely not, you know. It's actually set built on quicksand, which is rather fragile at present, because you probably would have noticed there's a lot of talk about voices and treaties and all sorts of stuff over the last few years. And why are we actually talking about that? That's the question the average Australian should be asking. Why are we actually talking about that? Because if Australia secured sovereignty properly, there's no need to discuss it. So we had a bit of a conversation with a few people down there, and all of them have said the same thing, that the sovereignty of Australia was not acquired properly, and that it is very fragile, and that it's not for us, the Aboriginal nations, to prove who we are. It's actually up for Australia to prove who it is and how it got here. You know, we're just the average, everyday lot who aren't very smart, but we like to look at things on the face and we take it for what it is.
You're a pretty smart bloke.
I wouldn't say that, you know. I think I got out of... I got out of state school, you know, but that's all we need.
The burden of proof is on you, yeah. Mr. Education.
For our learned listeners, could you define sovereignty? There is an international definition of what it is to be sovereign, isn't there, in regards of, you know, a standing force, that sort of thing, or is that another definition of thing?
No, look, sovereignty is, yeah, you're right. Sovereignty is an important thing to understand. Because sovereignty of a nation is that there is no other man-made law above you, which sort of gets me to question the international law sphere that Australia participates in. Are they truly sovereign if they are participating in the international order? But sovereignty is where there's been some high court cases about this, where they define it quite clearly, that the sovereignty resides in the people of a nation. And when you take part in the nation, you hand up some of your God-given right, whatever that may be, to the nation to make laws to govern you, but also to protect you. If you read the preamble of the Citizenship Act, it makes it very clear that there's two. It's a two-way street.
Does that sovereignty of that nation have to have some land to exist on?
Oh, now you're asking about the homeland of the Australians, which is rather dangerous because we know where our territory is. We've actually got a big map hanging on the... When you walk in the front door of the place here, there's a big map hanging on the wall that says, you know, this is our world. We know it's here. The mob next door know we're here. This is where they know our... They know where our country is. We know where our country is. But I asked the question, you know, where's the homeland for the Australians?
Well, that's the contention, isn't it?
Or you mean the boat people? Because if they didn't come and acquire sovereignty properly... Under international norms at the time, and they didn't because it's been overturned. It's been overturned in the Mabo case, and then when the if you read the Native Title Act 93, they actually in the preamble state there that the High Court of Australia has overturned the belief that it was terra nullius or occupied by people of such low intelligence that they can't form a society, and it's been proven quite the opposite. The law systems of the Aboriginal nations are very intricate. They're very robust and they've been here for a hell of a long time.
Well, I think perhaps you could just outline again the Montevideo Convention in 1933, because that's something that, let's say, an international standard on what a functioning administration / sovereign entity or government at international law can conduct its affairs at.
Well, it's a pretty good thing because, it's got a bit of age to it now, 90-odd years roughly. And there are a number of countries that have supported that. But basically, there's four points to what a sovereign state is or a nation state is. And one is, you know, you've got to have a population. Australia's got its population. We've got ours.
We have about around 300 citizens.
On the citizenship book, we've got the tribal stature as well. But this is now we're moving into the world of paper. So we've got 300 that are literally in paper on the nation. And the map on the wall, you've got to have a territory. So the map on the wall is the territory. It's a paper representation of the actual country, of the land. If we got ours, does Australia have its? It's got a system of government, you know, which is down there where we visited, the big house on the, you know, on the hill there. And well and good to them. They've got a fancy one. We don't have as fancy a building as that, but we have a government that has actually been acknowledged in the Federal Court of Australia through the numerous... Native title determination, where they said Yidinji has a system of authority and decision making. You know, is that what Canberra is all about? A place of authority and decision making that sure resembled the government to me, which is resembling ours.
We've got the Yidinji bubble, thanks.
No, not the Canberra one. Yeah, look, that's like I said, that's very odd. And also, then you've got to have a mechanism for international relations. So there's basically four pretty broad criteria for what a nation is. But the one that I question all the time is if we have our territory and Australia has no right to acquire our territory, no treaty, and they've admitted to that the Aboriginal people own the land, where's the homeland? Where's the territory of the Commonwealth of Australia? If all the mobs are still here, and they are, they haven't ceded any territory to anyone, where's Australia's territory?
Yeah, and, what are the banks selling and trading in terms of land titles and... all these other things, which is, you know, an interesting question to think about. But what, rather than on the ifs, buts and whens and whatnot, I think what Yidinji has put on the table cures the whole error in the description of title, the error in the constitution, and it can provide longevity to the Commonwealth as is in its current state if it wants to interact with the Yidinji nation through the sovereign Yidinji government, for example?
Well, look, it might have no choice in the very near future, the way things are going. When they pulled up our chief superintendent of police, as these academics down in the Canberra bubble have stated, it's not for us to prove who we are. We know who we are. They know who we are. It's up for Australia to prove who it is and how it actually got here. And who said Australia could acquire sovereignty over the whole nation, of the whole country here, of all the land, not the nation, I use that wrong, of all the land, that the asset that belongs to the Indigenous nations. Who said Australia could claim that as their territory?
And who said that they were the number one service provider to provide identity for the Yidinji people, for example?
We've gone... we've actually gone down that road, probably, what's that now? I'm just thinking back 7 years. Well, we raised that very question to a number of senators on country and down there in the Canberra bubble. We have a right to cede sovereignty because we haven't ceded it yet. So they agreed wholeheartedly, yes, we've got a right to cede it. But why is it to Australia? Why does it have to be to Australia? What if they're offering the worst deal for us? And they appear to be because they are in belligerent occupation. What would happen? What would happen if we said, no, look, we need to protect ourselves to get the best deal for our people? We need to really consider our people. The Australians are in belligerent occupation and we owe no allegiance, and I'll say this, we owe no allegiance to the Commonwealth of Australia at this stage.
Well, even saying that, even Blind Freddy can see that it's quite a simple remedy from our point of view, right? So if you've got everything that's working on your territory, why destroy it? Why not just say, hey, look, thank you very much for building this, but let's go move forward now correctly and legitimately together, you know, and in the good book it says, how can we walk together if no one agrees with walking together? And it's something that I put in writing to one of the former Prime Ministers, Scott Morrison, saying, hey, look, how can two parties walk together if they don't agree?
Well, this is so simple. The Yidinji way is so simple. We don't need to change the constitution. That constitution has got nothing to do with us.
The Australian one you're talking about.
Yeah, the Australian one. We have our own constitution that formed our government pursuant to tribal law. Now, you know, I'll ask Yirrkala, if we aren't Australian, what's the Australian constitution got to do with us?
No more than the Chinese one or the Brazilian one, or it's just it's another country somewhere else. They don't exist in Yidinji other than leaving us offering, very kindly, I mind you, offering the opportunity for them to treaty, because we can offer it anywhere else, as you said.
And if we do so, and we actually raised this question down on the Canberra bubble just the other day, what would happen? Just think about this for a minute. If, as we said to a couple of senators back in 17, if we offer the deal to someone else and they take it up, and all of a sudden we're raising the red flag with the yellow stars on it, or whatever it may be, or the
Liverpool
union,
one.
Or the Union Jack, for example. What if we had the red, white and blue here? You know what I mean? We got every right. So if we offer that to them, the Australian flag has to come down.
Look, I think it's very important to let the Yidinji citizenry know, without giving away too much secret squirrel business, obviously with the different levels of security as part of our ministry and our office holding responsibilities, I can safely say that we met with some interesting characters that would have other privileges inside the Commonwealth of Australia, for example. We let them know at every turn that Yidinji is here to help settle the past and secure the future. We're here to protect the Commonwealth of Australia. And not only that, if anything does go down the road of argy-bargy or Yidinji other troublemakers, then these people are aware at every point that we move forward that we have done this, we've provided this, we've offered this, and we continue to offer this. But at the end of the day, we can't force our love on those people who may want to actually ransack and destroy the Commonwealth.
Well, wasn't it just the other day that there was some incursion onto a military depot where, as we were just talking about just a while ago, where someone claimed the right to be able to enter onto a piece of land? And that really concerns me because, you know, that's the last thing Yidinji want to see on his territory is any form of weaponry that could cause harm in great numbers, you know. And that's why we went, that was part of the reason to go down, is to say, look, we are very concerned about what's going on around the world and how it may impact our nation, because we've got to protect our people, but also we're offering to protect Australia's people as well. And this is where a treaty can be done without altering the constitution to secure the future. And even if we just go down the road of, let's just get an initial agreement to work together. Yeah. Not a formal treaty, just the agreement to work together.
Yeah, I think they're doing that in Israel and Palestine at the moment. They're working behind in the private back channels to try and negotiate something where, you know, there's a bit of a break and a reprieve and a possibility to end the madness, let's say. But coming back to your point there, I'll read a little bit from the ABC about that particular incident. And we did bring this up a few weeks ago on the program about the law being in, hijacked by international actors,
bad actors.
Yeah. And we're not talking about B-grade movies. We're talking about people who have evil intent. Okay, Perth man pleads guilty to impersonating officer, the irony there, at Kununurra Norforce Army Depot. In short, Reese Joshua Sturgeon made his first appearance in Kununurra Magistrates Court on Friday, where he pleaded guilty to 6 charges. The 42-year-old represented himself in court, where he told the magistrate he was on a spiritual journey at the time of offending. So what happens next? Apparently, Sturgeon was denied bail and will be sentenced at a higher court during July. So the Perth man admitted to breaking into the army barracks. He said it was a spiritual journey, pretending to be a Commonwealth official, and various stealing offences he's pleaded guilty to. The court heard that he broke into Norforce Depot and basically pretended to be a field marshal and commandeered vehicles, one of which he insisted was cleaning under. So, I mean, this is a inside the Commonwealth, obviously, wearing Commonwealth vetted uniform, but not holding office correctly. And I think that's the... Oops, there goes the our $5 million gift from the so-and-so nation there, the glass vase or cup, whatever it is. That was the noise. But coming back to this thing, Gunyara, impersonating a public official is very, very serious inside the Commonwealth, and we would support 100% the courts, to any court really, to determine and take action on that. But it's a very different thing from what we're talking about earlier.
Yeah, look, even in our world, to impersonate one of our officers is just as serious as being in their world. But what worries me about this thing that happened over there in the West is, was this person of sound mind, which is a big question we've got to ask. And if he can get access to military-grade equipment, that's even more scary, because they have the possibility of doing a lot of damage to a lot of people in one go. So I know the ADF are pretty secure in their stuff, but what does worry me is there may be an influx of equipment from overseas, on the black market, So it's not only from the ADF. We've got people out there of unstable mind that I've known. You'll be very careful of that. And if they can get a hold of this junk, these weapons, we should be living in fear of it. We've got to do something about it. And that was part of the reasoning that we had to have a look at down in Canberra last week. So people have bad intent towards Australia. There are a lot of countries out there that are not Australia friendly. We've got to be very mindful of that.
New Zealand?
Yeah, well, they were just New Zealand. Don't worry about them. But you see what I'm saying? We've got to be so careful that our law doesn't get hijacked, that it doesn't get this sort of equipment inside our world. We've got every right to possess stuff, but we don't want that. We want to use the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples correctly and through treaty, through formal agreement, which doesn't need the alteration of the Constitution at all, to ensure that Australia has been given permission to protect the borders of the Yidinji Nation. So our territorial integrity stays in place. Australia gets somewhere to rest its constitution. They get the role to protect the place, so they control the military-grade equipment. Not us. We don't need to control that. We can assist them, direct them, whatever it is, or underwrite any more equipment. But we do need, it's just so basic, so simple, it's so very, very easy to do. What they're frightened of, I feel, is that they've been living on a lie for, 200-odd years? How do you reverse the lie? There's going to be a bit of shame in it. There's going to be a bit of, oh, gee, we're sorry about that. We have done wrong. But it does say in the good book, forgive your enemy.
Yeah. Well, the common excuse that you hear quite often is that that was people that came before us. But, if my grandfather steals something and then, it passes it down the line and I end up with it, doesn't mean it's not stolen anymore.
It's still stolen, and theoretically you should be giving it back to whoever it was stolen from. It could be 10 generations. Give back to who you stole from, whoever stolen from. But that's still, we've still got to remedy the past so they can give us back our land and say, okay, well, we're not going to occupy it anymore. But does that solve the current problem of, on our country, having 200,000 or 300,000 illegal boat people or unlawful boat people?
Yeah, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. A very good question there. We'll continue the conversation after the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Gagnara, you were bringing up some important things there. And I, you know, for those who may be wanting to know, how much can you buy a some sort of missile and where do you get from? What website? Just kidding. Obviously, there's black market opportunities for all these things. And unfortunately, these important things, I guess, for self-defense are making their way on the black market.
Oh, look, you know, there's been a lot of stuff, you know, on the black market. They now say that Kosovo is probably the place of, you know, the black market for military grade equipment. And one of the figures that, you know, was bandied about there when we were in an intelligence meeting there recently was for a Javelin, you know, these anti-tank guided missiles, you know, roughly 40 million, you know, but if you're in one of those cartels where money is, you know, plentiful, 40 million is nothing, you know. You've got to be so careful of all this stuff, which is why Yidinji is being very proactive and going down south over this very issue. You know, we met with a number of people there about this and highlighted this major concern that we have through the intelligence agency that things aren't feeling as good as what they should on our territory because of this stuff.
Well, let's change the tune now. Let's move away from black market products to the voice. Obviously, the overwhelming no vote recently at the referendum there really put a cat amongst the pigeons inside the Commonwealth in terms of people who wanted it to be yes. But now I'm going to read from the ABC News website here. Just give me a bit of time. South Australia First Nations voice to give Aboriginal people a seat at the table, Commissioner says. So this is just this month, not too long ago. Dale Aegis says the South Australia voice will allow Aboriginal people to discuss their concerns directly with the government. My question is, can they do that now? South Australia's voice to Parliament will not be a silver bullet for improving the lives of First Nations people. The man responsible for delivering the country's inaugural state-based body has conceded. SA First Nations Voice Commissioner Dale Aegis said the state's voice to Parliament would instead give Aboriginal people a seat at the table to discuss their concerns directly with the government. The voice isn't the silver bullet, isn't the answer to all the issues that Aboriginal people are facing, the Kaurna, Noongar, Ngadjeri and Ngunnawalli man told the ABC. What this is just an approach to get those issues to be heard in a more public space. So basically, under the model, 4 to 6 First Nations people would be elected to sit on 6 local voices, with 2 representatives from each local voice then to the state voice. With more than 100 candidates officially declared and early voting set to open, I think it was the last week or this week, the advisory body Mr. Aegis helped spearhead for is now just weeks away from becoming a reality. This is what he said again. The situation Aboriginal people have found themselves for quite some time is probably a bit unacceptable. If we keep going down the path we're going to get nowhere. So, Gagnara, I think, and Yirralum, for me, this is just another way of... I mean, if people aren't being heard at that top level, then ransack the parliament, change the whole lot, because the federal government should have a representative to ask questions in Parliament, for example, during question time. State government ministers had the same privilege. Why aren't these ministers or representatives at that level of the existing representative bodies are being conveying these messages on behalf of Aboriginal constituents?
There's a number of issues to really look at here. And we're going to have to call upon the education minister, you know, because I'm not educated, I'll say that. But, you know, you're talking about Aboriginal South Australians, Aboriginal Australians, whatever it is, Aboriginal South Australians. Who are they? They are what? You know, that's why I'm going to call upon the esteemed education minister to really clarify, because this is very, very technical stuff. Who are the Aboriginal South Australians?
Yeah, but the question is, though, if this isn't working...
Well, and this is where I'm alluding to. We need to get him to clarify the position of who these people are before we go to the rest of it.
We know that they're Australians because they're talking about it, right? So why isn't the Australian system working?
Because it's 97-3, 97%.
No, but they're all equal under the law. So why aren't these issues getting to the top of that tree in South Australia being heard, because he's saying that they're not being heard?
Of course they're not. The 3%, you know, the 3% are going to change laws that affect 97%. You know, this is what we got to look at this. How in this part of the world, if you're in Australia, you're 3% as the Indigenous Australians, as Aboriginal South Australians, Aboriginal Victorians, Aboriginal Queenslanders, you make up 3% of the population. Now, of the Commonwealth of Australia, that is, you make up 3%. The government has to govern for the majority. This is how popular democracy works. You govern for the majority. So if 3% said we don't want any Australians on our country, you know, we don't want any white fellas on our country. So what are you going to do with the 97%? Now, the 97% said, oh, no, we'll like to all live together. So they win. That majority wins. It's the biggest dog rules the camp. Now, remember that this is the manifestation of colonialism. You've still got the same human being wearing the same crown, you know. I'll have to get the Minister for Education to clarify it again,
well,
you know.
Well, that was skillfully hand-passed on to the Minister, you know. But, Yirrkala, obviously there's issues there, but these are issues that are, and Ganyara rightfully alluded to it, a stem that have a deep roots in British colonialism and, you know, a Eurocentric model.
So much of what we talk about on the show is referring to different nations, British, Australian, so forth, Yidinji. And all of this discussion is always centred around laws. That's where most, you know, for me, I'll speak only from my perspective anyway. I've never thought about these things from that perspective quite often. You think of it more of a personal matter, of a nature that how people feel about it, rather than what's written on paper. And all these things are written on paper. So, you know, as Ganyara pointed out, that under popular democracy, everyone's considered equal. So if that's the type of government that exists for Australia, how on earth can you start separating different people out and making different rules for them? And as Yidinji has pointed out, you know, the process using, once again, these laws that dictate how we move around each day and how we interact each day, for Yidinji, by creating its own laws, it makes it quite simple, because we are no longer Australians within the Yidinji Nation. And if we want to act, whatever Australia does, that's their choice. But they can't supersede or override anything that Yidinji chooses, because, once again, it's first in time. So, you know, these voices, the voice in South Australia, well, my understanding is it's no different to the national recent voting that went on, where it was just an advisory panel. It's got no ability to make any laws. It can give some advice, and I would suspect that's why the gentleman behind it is saying that it's not a silver bullet, because it's a toothless tiger.
It really is, you know, and actually it's even more toothless than the federal one, because at least the federal one, there wasn't a government to reject whatever that voice had said. The state voice will be subject to whatever the Commonwealth say. Now, if the Commonwealth don't like something that's being said by the state voice, they can override it, you know, no matter which state, because the state has, the federal government has ultimate power on this country. As long as it doesn't conflict, you can have your law inside the state, as long as it doesn't conflict with the Commonwealth of Australia. The minute it conflicts with anything inside Australia, then there's a problem and the Commonwealth will override whatever you've just done. So it's going to be good for nothing. It's going to be like the Victorian treaty process where that didn't work out very well. You know, that was a bit of a dud. I feel that this may be, let's get some cans and let's just kick them down the road and see how long we can go until something really happens where we've got to absolutely do something. That's what Australia is basically doing. Let the states do the voice now, which is just another decoy. But what it is doing is supplying evidence that they need to do something with these other groups of people, that what they call the 3%, the Indigenous people. They've got to do something with them, and that's, they call that a treaty or a formal agreement or a negotiated settlement, whatever you want to call it. They need to do something. Otherwise, that 3% may possibly change the flag hoisted over whatever building is there. You know, that's what we said in back in 2017. Think about the consequence if the Chinese done a deal. We'd be having to change the flag on the government building here over the road, you know, the big building, and hoist the Chinese flag. How would that go down?
Well, maybe we could do a BRICS thing, because we can have rice and curry, you know, some South African dish, some snook, I think it is there, some fish, lots of other things. The Brazilians have some good food too, and the Ruskies. But what I'm saying is that, obviously we're mucking around there, but at the same time, that's been confirmed by legal experts inside the Commonwealth saying, yeah, you can go do a deal with China.
And that was only said to us last year again.
Exactly. So that sort of blew our socks off. I was like, yeah, we can do it. But it also legitimises Australia then, because Australia's in the pecking order, in third in time of law, because then, let's say, if, for whatever reason, Yidinji becomes a Chinese territory, then Australia could continue here, but they don't have any say in it.
Yeah, well, look, you know, my preferred status, believe it or not, is that we don't cede 100% sovereignty to anyone.
You can't. We'd be going against the whole lot.
Otherwise, we disappear, and then is the treaty valid? Hmm. You know, any formal agreement or negotiated settlement really requires two parties to remain in existence forever and a day.
Absolutely. So even with the analogy of a married couple, one party dies, then
it's over.
It's over. It's finished. But then the surviving individual can go and seek another partner if they choose to do that.
Recontract. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what this is all about. Now, Yidinji's, you know, the number one top dog on in the camp, as you put it, and you know, there's a number of other female dogs lining up potentially for that contract. So that hasn't been done. But coming back to what this is all about, I think it's really important, because the Yidinji way is the way to settle things. So you know how we have Catalonia and Spain and West Papua, Indonesia, all these things. It is possible that the Yidinji model, or the spirit and intention behind it, can really provide that global peace and security that the UN speaks about but has failed to deliver.
The biggest thing to ask, do they want it? That's the question you've got to ask, the most basic question. Does the world really want this, or are they so much more content to make lots of money out of the military complex, you know, the military industrial complex, where they're making these bullets, and you let them go, and okay, that was $500,000, or that was $1 million, and we'll go and make another one, and we get this massive cash flow, or is that what really drives them? You know, I've got to ask myself, what is the intent? But when I look at the United Nations instruments, which I read, you know, very, very regularly to get understanding on this, Australia is acting contrary to the Charter of the United Nations. It really is. There's no ifs and no buts about it, because it is a manifestation of colonialism. Will the voice in that manifestation of colonialism have any effect have any input to protect Australia's foundation, that being a properly concluded treaty, because state-based treaties cannot work, they do not work, and it's been reported by the experts in the Constitutional Expert Group. In 2015, Greg Craven put in a number of papers at the time that, especially the ABC, there's one there, he said, these are not treaties in the true sense of the word, and these are not nations in the true sense of the word. So they are nothings.
Yeah, and that's the problem I mentioned earlier with Spain and Catalonia. The Catalonian Parliament and its nation, its people, who identify as Catalonians, want to break away from Spain. But Spain gave the Catalonians a voice under its constitution, and therefore they can't break away from it. And they're wondering why they can't do that. So this is a model that's tried and tested everywhere, but it needs to be done correctly to have this peace and security.
Now you see why I said, let's get clarification from the educated one, the education minister. Are the Aboriginal South Australians Australians, or are they someone else?
Well, when you walk up to a person within the borders of what Australia calls South Australia and you ask them for identity, it depends what they pull out. If they pull out an Australia's driver's licence or birth certificate, well, they've identified as Australian. If they've done the work as the Adinji have done and set up the laws that enables a identification to be produced of their own nation, well, then they can choose either.
Absolutely right. And that's where it all comes back to, and he hit the nail right on the head. The piece of paper. What did he pull out of his pocket? Remember, we're all humans, and we are like any other animal, kangaroo, bandicoot, whatever you want to call us. We're still an animal of some sort. We're a human being that is born, it lives, and it dies. So, you know, we're the flesh and blood. And actually, there was Yuval Harari. I liked one of his speeches recently, part of it anyway. He was getting a bit blunt with it, where he said, you cut a human open and you do not find any human rights in there. You'll find a heart and you'll find a kidney or whatever it may be.
This is that World Economic Forum gentleman.
Yeah. But he's right. He is. I would defy anyone, especially when they're doing an autopsy on a corpse or whatever, to look in there to see if there's any legislation, any laws, any stuff in there that resembles human rights. For example, like you said, you do not find human rights inside the body. That's all in our mind. And when we die, the mind is gone, you know. So where are the human rights? They're somewhere else. It's in what the minister just said, in paper.
Yep. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, and we're not on paper, but we're in digital format today thanks to the National Indigenous Radio Service, if you're listening inside of Australia, and our friends at Bumma Bipra Media, 98.7 FM. We'll be back after the break for some final comments.
Started looking in the mirror, faced my own demons. Had every right to be mad, I had my own reasons. But to take it out on family was a bad feeling. I just wanna pay back my mob with what I was gifted. I just wanna be a good mummy, build my babies a home. Put a crown on my mama and I'll build her a throne. You can't talk about my past cause them days dead and gone. And if you go and bring it up, you must have hate in your soul. And that's real, I just wanna bring it back for a minute. And thank my sister and my mama for my children. Cause I was trapped in addiction and in prison, but they gave me the tools so I could live a little different. Thank my matriarchy and thank my babies for me. I must be a good woman if I birth them seeds. And to be a better woman, I must follow my dreams and give back to everybody who done gave to me. It's a full circle, what goes around comes around. Yeah, I was lost at the start, but my soul got found. And I just wanna be here and make my whole family proud. Do everything in my power to make them all smile now.
Ha. The black is strong and powerful.
I'm believing it and I'ma do better. Good karma, yes, I'm receiving it. Made it all real cause I was sick and tired of dreaming it. And this life here's a gift, I'm gonna keep on succeeding it. I had to get it out the mud and make it better. Grab my babies by the hands and we're gonna do this together. Got these tears in my eyes while I write them love letters. And I know I'm not perfect but I'm never gonna give up. I gotta
plant them seeds and tell the truth how it is. I gotta stand up strong and be a mum to my kids. I gotta come back strong and go and face some fears, cause I was sick and tired of hating on myself for them years. I am powerful and I don't even know the half of it, but I'm whole within my being and I am no longer masking it. Every time I fall I now look at the stars, cause dreams are for real, I never lose that spark.
The black is strong and powerful, melanin shine beautiful, resilient, we made it this far, we done made it through the dark, and looking at the real monarch, looking at the real monarch.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. We're going to have some final comments, but before we do offer our words of whatever you want to call it, I guess, Gunyara, one of the most important things that is happening around the planet is that people are waking up, and I'm saying in a woke sense, but they're certainly questioning the system. And it's interesting that the world, through this... unification of various member states, are pushing the end of neocolonialism, and that's where Yidinji is featuring quite heavily.
Yeah, the world is going multipolar. The unipolar world is all but over. It's on its last legs. Things like BRICS are forming. And you've got to say, why are BRICS forming? Because, you know, the neocolonial world or the empire days are over, you know, they're coming to an end. It's been a good run up until now. But there was a forum over in Russia, I think it was, a couple of weeks back there, where it was they were discussing neocolonialism, and there were countries, all the countries were represented, like Africa and places like that. There was a lot of Asian countries had their ministers there. But the one that really stood out the most to me was there were no Aboriginal people there, no people from this great continent here. Because Australia is white. It's a colonial world. It couldn't have its people there. That is the problem. Australia is the problem. It is the neocolonial manifestation, whatever you want to call it. It is the old world that's slowly dying. And then, you know, Yidinji should have had representatives there, because they are the ones that were there before colonialism. They've always been here and they're still here today. This is the crazy part about it. But they couldn't have us there. Simply because Australia is just being so belligerent in its occupation of the territory, it's refusing outright to recognise the sovereignty of the Aboriginal nation in paper. Just go and get an agreement together. But the African people who are there, the ministers from Kenya or whatever, they're saying we are sick to death of how the European Western world has just raped, pillaged and plundered their country. And probably none, that should have a bigger complaint. There'd be no one have a big complaint other than the Aboriginal people. They have been deprived of absolutely everything they've ever had. If you read the likes of UNDRIP, they've got to give it all back. They've got to give back the trees, give back the grass, give back everything that they were deprived of. But how do you do that? But this, it was a really interesting forum to show the world is now starting to realise that the great Western power is all but over. Sad as it is, we could have negotiated a way out. We can still look after Australia, by the way, which is what I'm saying about doing a treaty the proper way, not changing the constitution, no other rubbish, not any other thing involved other than the constitutional recognition of the Aboriginal nations in their independent lot. They can't do a broad overview and say the whole lot are, recognised now. They've got to recognise each and every individual nation that stands up, because some may not want to stand up.
Well, that's right, and it's all about choice. At the end of the day, if people are comfortable with the Commonwealth of Australia and the roles and responsibilities and the benefit.
And comfortable with Australia's foundation, which is the most important part, be it Aboriginal, be it Chinese, be it German, Australian, it doesn't matter. If you're comfortable with the foundation of Australia being on quicksand, so fragile, well and good. Go out and be satisfied with it. But remember that fragility may be the undoing of Australia should one of the nations want to go and do a treaty with someone else.
Yeah, so coming back to what I was saying there, those things are about choice. But, you can make these choices, but what's the What are the ramifications? What are the reactions to your action? And most of the people I talk to about sovereignty from the pre-1770 tribal nations on this continent really want justice and they don't want to feel bad anymore.
Yeah.
Like they're being a second-class citizen or whatever people describe it as, that experience. But at the same time, the Yidinji model is really, really important because it looks after every man and woman on the territory, and that's what this is about. It's not about, like we're saying, changing the Australian Constitution. The Yidinji Nation is not focusing on that.
We don't want the gallows back, you know, the Nuremberg gallows. We don't need that. We actually don't want that. We want every human to live a full life, you know, black, white or brindle, it doesn't matter. Every human should have a good life.
Yeah, and you know, that model of governance and administration does have its flaws. I mean, just even now, the Federal Reserve of New York saying that, currently there's a credit card debt of $1.13 trillion. That's not sustainable. I mean, who's going to pay for that? You know, the Yidinji way is not about debt and control. It's about freedom and life and choice. And if people realise that, then they'll know what's decent when it's put on the table. And that's why we're having a lot of people interested in from around the world about what Yidinji's up to.
Well, the one that scares me the most is the US debt of $34 trillion, roughly.
Hmm.
Where are they going to get the money for that? No one can. No one can sustain that because this is all built on falsehood. Even in the US, where are the treaties with the indigenous people? I mean, proper treaties. They do recognise those indigenous nations as a sovereign state, but within the US. But how did the US get that? You know, they could sort this problem out if they listened to the Yidinji way of things and got validity, you know, and that's why we're going back to very basic stuff with this. What is the card in your pocket? As the Minister for Education said, what's the card in your pocket? Not who you are, not the man or the woman. What's the thing in your pocket? And it's all about identity. So if we want to identify in the colonial world, as he said, you pull out your Australian card. If you want to identify in your Indigenous world, you pull out that one. But if you haven't formed the government like we have, what chance do you have of creating that identity if you haven't reinvigorated your laws? This is what they're all saying. Bring back your laws, do a deal, you know, through the Department of Foreign Affairs. And that's why you asked earlier about a sovereign state. What are the conditions? One is the ability to enter into foreign relations. Now, are we foreign to Australia? Are they foreign to us? Or are we inside Australia? What is it? And this is what I keep saying, why we need to go back to very basic words and keep it so simple.
Yurulum.
Murmu.
Are we foreign?
some final comments for the day.
Yeah, sure. No, okay. It's wrapping your head around and keeping in mind that, as Ganyara continually points out, that if someone asks who you are and looks for proof of who you are, if what you pull out, whatever you pull out of your pocket, or whatever form of identification, that's the law you're choosing to be with. Now, most First Nations people of this country, how many, you know, over 200 different nations exist on this continent, and they've got the ability, if they so choose to, create their own laws which create that identity, so they can choose to pull out something different other than their Australian identity, which means they operate under a different law. Yidinji has done that. And I encourage them to do the same.
Yeah, and, you know, the tribal nations, in this case Yidinji, has every right to do that. And they're the only ones that can do it here on this territory, on the Yidinji territory, is the Yidinji ID. So we can't produce an Australian ID, the same way Australia can't produce one for us. So our Chief Superintendent of Police can only use a Yidinji-issued identity for the purposes of peace and security on our territory.
While he's being seen legally and politically through that identity, now if we, to support what the Minister just said, the Minister of Education just said, that if you go to Article 5 of the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples, the Indigenous people have got a right to revitalise all their junk, bring back their society, bring back their world, all their institutions, buildings, governments, whatever you may think they had, you can do it for all you want. But you do also have a right to participate in the life of the state, which in this case is the Commonwealth of Australia. Now, how do you participate in the state? You enter into the state, into the Commonwealth of Australia, through a birth certificate. That is a door only. It's nothing else. There's not big funds attached to it. All this other BS you hear about, straw man, all that rot is all just crazy. You participate in the life estate through the birth certificate, just like how you participate in the life of our state through our birth certificate. What does the birth certificate create? It's your entry point to create all your other identity. If you go and look at the in the world of Australia, the birth certificate is required to get a driver's license, to get a passport, to open a bank account, to do anything. That's your entry point. But in our world, our birth certificate is the entry point to all our stuff. So, you know, it's very, very simple.
It's an exciting thought, and I realise now how much difference it made in my life to become a dual citizen, to become a Yidinji citizen, that I've got a choice, not to do wrong things, but to choose the morality and integrity of the law system I'm within. So within the Yidinji nation, I feel much more comfortable than I do pulling out my Australian citizenship.
And just, you mentioned morality. That was one topic that was raised in Canberra last week. As it was said, Australia doesn't hold the high moral ground because they are very, very low on morals for what they have done.
Anyway, that's it for the show this week. Thank you for your audience and your company, and we'll catch you next week on Black Law Tribal Edition. Big thanks to Jackie and the team at Bumma Bipra 98.7 FM and our friends at the National Indigenous Radio Service, and of course the Yidinji Broadcast Service going strong, and we'll catch you next week. May God's peace be upon you in the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach. We'll catch you next week.
I said it one time, yeah, I said it two times, oh yeah, oh yeah. I see the beauty in your eyes, and it's nothing like I imagined, oh yeah. You're an angel in disguise, yeah, you've been sent from heaven, oh yeah. So baby, won't you love me, love me, love me? Baby, won't you love me, love me, love me? I can be your Superman, baby, we can fly away. So baby, if you love me, love me, love me. Baby, if you love me, love me, love me. I can be your Superman, baby, we can fly away. So baby, if you love me, come and take my hands and we will run away. I can take you down to a brighter day. Baby, girl, you know I got you any day, now, anyway, now. So baby, don't you leave my side, everything will be okay, oh. Yeah, we can take it to the ocean, feel the breeze run through emotions, and let it take us away. So baby, I fell in love with an island girl. She's my jewel and my island pearl. I know she's savvy, I'm the one for her. So baby, won't you love me, love me, love me? Baby, won't you love me, love me, love me? I can be your Superman, baby, we can fly away. So baby, if you love me, love me, love me. Baby, if you love me, love me, love me. I can be your Superman, baby, we can fly away. So if you are the one for me, I'm the one for you, ooh. We can dance in the